Gavrilek, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to the Round 9 edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. My name is Lauren Wood. We, of course, are coming to you from our various hubs around the Melbourne metro area and beyond, like all of our listeners, boys. And it worked for the Saints on the weekend. Maybe we need to start this episode by coming into our virtual huddle, closing our eyes and taking a bit of a grounding breath, Ando, because it certainly worked for the Saints at quarter time, and it might be what we need as this frantic month of footy prepares to finally begin.
I guess Los Hubs are possibly going to determine who wins the premiership. And I want to ask Mick this. He may be able to tell me. I know West Coast play their next four games in Perth. Is your anticipation or expectation that they will have to move after that?
Well, they should. But I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that, Ando. But I think if they get to play at home for the rest of the year, the asterisk gets a little bit bigger. I anticipate, yes, they'll have to do some more hub work somewhere, but not guaranteed.
We didn't quite write them off a few weeks ago.
Oh, though, I did.
Ando, well, Mick might have.
But, egg on toast.
Geez, did you reconsider that theory on Sunday, Mick?
No, 100%. Although, look at the ladder. It first is on 24 points and 12th right down to GWS on 16 points, only two games behind. It's a throw a blanket over them type stuff, Scotty, and I don't think anyone has any idea who's going to win the premiership.
Well, take Port Adelaide, for example. You know, we fornicate over them and then Loz's team rides.
Speak for yourself.
Loz's team comes into town and treats them with disrespect. So, I mean, the Eagles will be they're the obvious ones we're going to love because of the biased home ground for a couple of weeks. But, you know, Collingwood will regroup. They've got players out. It's just going to be all over the place. I think it's just we're going to have a new premiership favourite or challenger every second day.
Well, the flag favourites, Ando, fluctuate. And the state of the game has fluctuated a fair bit this season too. I mean, we've had sort of all sorts of save our game discussions over recent weeks, but, geez, round eight was pretty good.
Yeah, Loz, I'm not here to knock the game this week. But one thing I will say, Lee Matthews is a legend. There aren't many living legends of the AFL. There's about 27, I think, in it. Kevin Bartlett is another and Malcolm Blight is another. And all three of those blokes have said the game is pretty well stuffed. So if you want to, and look, watching last night's game, which was Freo Geelong, it's not a fair sample in that because it rained all night. But Susie, my wife, made the comment, why don't they play, kick the ball around the boundary line the whole night? And that's, I was trying to explain to her, you know, you can't kick it back into the middle because then you risk a turnover and that's where teams score from most. But that's what footy is now. It's around the lines, around the boundary lines the whole time. And sides that can overcome that, and maybe the West Coast Eagles with their targets when you've got Oscar Allen emerging. He's pretty good last year. He's even better this year. Waterman looks like he's handy. Well, he's something different, Waterman. He can take a mark, kick one or two goals. And obviously Kennedy and Darling. All they lack for me is probably a small forward. And you could say they've got Liam Ryan and Cripps. Cripps probably his best footy's behind him, to my mind. But Willie Rowley would be that player. So he's massive, a massive out. And maybe they lack a small, fast defender because the rest of their defence is outstanding and Natalie is in form.
Lauren, I'm interested in you saying the footy was pretty good. The scoring was diabolical, wasn't it? You had one team kick 111 points. That was the Eagles. They broke loose. Collingwood just basically couldn't maintain the pressure game that everyone is playing. The next best was 73, your St Kilda team that blew Port Adelaide away with 73 points, an astonishing 73 points. That some teams were scoring like 40 points. Now, do you think, I've got a theory, Ando, that the 16-minute quarters allows teams to hang on with their defensive crap for the duration of the quarter. That last 5 to 8 minutes, you can't blow a team away in a quarter. So it's actually, we need to get back to 20-minute quarters permanently next year to actually help. Obviously, there's more time to score, but I think teams just can't maintain the rage, the defensive rage for the longer quarters.
And that's fair call, Mick. I spoke to a statistician the other day and he said exactly that. If you look at goals that are scored late in quarters, in traditional quarters, I'm talking about the 20-minute jobs, there's a lot. Yeah, it's 2-3 goals extra. So that is hurting the game and making it a more defensive game. So the 16-minute quarters, and I think you three were all against them right from the start. I probably wanted to have a look at it and thought it was okay initially, but I was wrong. The game needs to go back to the quarters, and it will. We know that.
Mentally, teams, you know, if you're behind, say you're starting 3 goals behind the second half and it seems the clock gets to your head and not giving up, but you know you've got another game in 4 days. It seems like teams are not shutting up shop, but it's easier to say, all right, this one's gone, we'll win the next one, which is something we've never had in our sort of the NBA mentality. Oh, we're playing, you know, tomorrow night. That's going to creep in more and more, I think.
The Lee Matthews comment was really interesting, though. He said, I'm at the game live. He's been at the Metricon and the Gabba, and he can actually see these zones in operation. And they literally, you can't move the ball now. They're so good at it, all 18 teams. And Wayne Carey was interesting on the power forward. He said that they're basically no good, this current group. But I can't cop that. There's some champion. In fact, I'd be interested to see the Duck get a just to see how he would have gone in this congestion. I'm sure he would have gone well, but your Toby Greens and your Tom Papley's, they're becoming it's almost like we need strikers in AFL now rather than footballers. You know, you need a guy who's got the speed who can get around and strike.
DeGoey did it, Toby did it, Papley keeps doing it. You're right. It's just the medium size freak strikers. Show with a bit of strikers. I like it.
Well, maybe while we're on Papley or Lethal, I loved Lethal's. I've heard him talk about a lot of footy topics. I can't say I've ever heard him talk about flat earthers. That was a realm that I had to hear Lee Matthews
who are flat earthers
before. But flat earthers, was it people who don't think the game is stuffed? Yeah. So, he definitely went whack on the weekend. But you've just mentioned Tom Papley there. Someone else who went whack on the weekend, of course, was Alistair Clarkson. We sit here Tuesday lunchtime. I think we're all assuming that a missive has been sent his way from AFL House this morning for his comments about Tom Papley. I might just put this one to the floor. Does he milk free kicks?
Oh, he's not the only one, and maybe he... I wouldn't label him as milks them. He's an intelligent forward. So is Toby Green. So is Joel. So they know if they're in the right position to get their opponent to infringe on them. So, no, I don't think you can say he milks them. And I don't agree with finding Clark. We're all grown men. John Longmire's a grown man. Papley's a grown man. Come on.
No.
Did he really say something really bad or racial?
What is the point of a please explain? If you've got a problem, find him. Don't get him to write a letter explaining himself. You know fully well what he meant.
What? Do you reckon those letters ever written?
Please explain. Pauline Hanson style. Give me a spell.
What about his record though, Mick? Because he's got form on the umps.
He lives on the edge. That's footy.
Clarko or Papley?
You know, it's not tiddlywinks. He's angry right now. Fair enough.
Let him talk. We want we want characters. We want the people want to hear their coach go off and have a go at the opposition. What's wrong with it?
What often happens with these coaches, great coaches who are under pressure, Mick Malthouse was a master of it, Kevin Sheedy and Alistair Clarkson, they deflect.
Yeah.
And they'll grab whatever they need to take the heat off. And that can be take it off themselves or take it off their team. And often it's to take it off their team. And Clarkson's a master, but Clarkson's also a hothead of the highest order. If you get a blown up, he was abusing an umpire at under nines game, the Southern Metro Football League, as he did about 10 years ago. That's pretty rare form. But
that's pretty poor form.
It's extraordinary. And he got a couple of others on a plane flight to Perth. wrapping to them. So look, he does what's necessary. He's a fighter. That's his nature. And what he said was it seemed like they had an extra man on the ground. Well, that to me is inflammatory. And yep. I'm with you, Mick, about it. Please explain, let us pull dust. But he should be fined for it because it's an unfair thing to say. You're accusing an umpire effectively of, well, I won't say the word I was going to say, but it's a bad accusation, that, so he shouldn't have said it.
Well, we'll keep a very close eye on what the AFL chooses to do. I think there seems to be a little bit of pressure, sort of as the day went on yesterday, to do something. As you say, Mick, don't just go halfway, given his record. But they're a club that's been in the news not only for the last couple of weeks, but again this week with your story front and back of Monday's Herald Sun. Of course, accusations from club great Don Scott that the Hawks were breaching the salary cap in the 80s. He spoke to the No Merger podcast, which is available now. Here's a little bit of what Don had to say.
Hawthorn were breaching the salary cap. The only reason Hawthorn held all those star players and had success was that they were paying under the lap. They had a bank account down in Tasmania and they were paying the players that way.
Now, he also made the same claim on 3AW a couple of years ago. So, Mick, just talk us through this one because, you know, we know Don, he's a pretty left-of-centre character, but this is one that he's been pushing for a while and it's not something that it sounds like he's just made up out of the blue.
He did mention it in 2018 on Tom Elliott's show on 3AW, you're right, but he wasn't that keen to talk about it, expand on it at that stage. But he's done this podcast, which any Melbourne or Hawthorn supporter can listen to, called No Merger. Just explores how the fact that Hawthorn, even though they won all those premierships, went broke in 94, 95 and considered a merger with Melbourne. Ando, you would remember that well. And in his involvement in that, Don Scott, he says that he spoke to impeccable sources in and around Hawthorn, the AFL, the VFL, who told him about this scam that Hawthorn had going right from about 85, 86 to 93, 94, involving a Tasmanian bank account and rorting the salary cap. He said the detail he went into was extensive. I don't know how or why you would make this up, that Phil Ryan, who was the Hawthorn president in the late 60s and 70s and then went to the AFL, you may have known him, Ando, as the salary cap officer through the 80s and 90s, warned Hawthorn about what they were doing. And I spoke to Ross Oakley about that yesterday, and Phil Ryan has since passed away, but Ross said that Phil never raised that with him. But I put it to you, it has put a lot of noses out of joint. Why would you make this up and how elaborate it is?
No, Don Scott isn't making it up. Don Scott and you three all know different parts of Don Scott. And what you do know is that he's honest. Don is, I mean, it works against him many times in his life. It's worked against Don. I'm sure it's cost him. I reckon there's one coaching job I can think of, and I'm going to say Collingwood, and I haven't had this conversation with him, but I think he had an interview there, and during the interview, that one of the blokes interviewing was smoking, and Don hates smoking with a passion, and either grabbed the cigarette or told the bloke to put it out in no uncertain terms. I reckon that's right. But that's Don, you know, and he would not be lying, Don Scott. So I take it that it happened. I was always surprised that Hawthorn had no money in 1994-95, having played in 8-9 grand finals in the previous decade. It made no sense. But they had a very small membership at that stage, which Ian Decker then built up by extraordinary methods and including cats and dogs, but he was brilliant for that club. Some of those Hawthorn players would have got unders. I mean, someone like Jason Dunstall, we think, is a superstar, but he wasn't a superstar until kind of late 80s, you know what I mean? He came from Queensland, he was battling for his position aside in 85 and then worked his way in. So the big wages wouldn't have come his way. It would have been Dermot, would have been getting big money, you would have thought, because he was a star right from the start. John Platten, I'd put in that category. Maybe Tony Hall. He's not a player people think of, but he came from South Australia, was a brilliant player. Darren Jarman, probably another.
Wasn't there a story, Ando, that, you know, didn't Jarman's wife work on reception? Like, that was very... that was she confirmed. Was getting paid. yep. a gazillion to answer phones.
Yeah, Hawthorn lost its way, Scotty. They were the family club, and you get down there on a Thursday night, and they'd have team selection. Everything was open, and they'd always cook the sausages in a piece of bread, and it was pretty basic. And then I saw fillet steak there one night, about 92 or something. And this is not Hawthorn, and the taps have become
gold plated taps,
which our dear and late colleague Trevor Grant wrote about. So
yeah, it was a brilliant column by Trevor.
Yeah, it was.
Dermot Brereton has said that it was his quote was, "If Don's silly claim had any legitimacy, I would honour it with an answer." I don't know. Jason Dunster was on Fox Footy last night. Did anyone bother to ask him about it? Did anyone see?
It's too hard to do, Mick. You don't do things like that these days. I mean, Don Scott would have, but unfortunately, it doesn't always happen.
Apparently not. Mick, I didn't know Tassie had become the Cayman Islands. When did this happen? Have I missed something here? Can I put some of my business in Tasmania?
Exactly. But again, what an elaborate thing to make up. The silence has been deafening, to be honest. Haven't heard anything from the AFL or Hawthorn, but did get a lot of messages from a lot of other people in football saying that one of the worst kept secrets in football. It's good to see it out and about and exposed.
Well, obviously, paying you too much for this podcast, Scotty, if you're exploring options like the Apple Isle to hide some of your money. But, Ando, you were there covering footy in that time. The suggestion from a few people once Mick's story was released was that, well, everyone else was doing it. Now, I don't know about you guys, but the house I grew up in, the fact that everyone else was doing it was kind of no excuse to be off and doing it yourself.
I'm not sure that everyone else was doing it. I mean, in fact, I know they weren't. That's rubbish. That's bullshit to say everyone else was doing it. It's just a convenient excuse. You reckon Butch Gray was doing it?
Does that make it right, does it?
No, of course it doesn't make it. That's right. It doesn't. Yeah. Of course it doesn't make it right. Yes. Do you reckon Footscray, Fitzroy were doing it? Richmond wasn't doing it. Richmond didn't have any money. Richmond completely broke in 1989. Everyone wasn't doing it. Carlton were doing it. Of course they would, because that's what they did, Carlton, because they're so arrogant. They thought they could get away with it.
So, Ando, should Raylene Boyle have taken drugs? Is that what they're saying? So for her to actually beat that girl, that drug cheat who beat her, she should have just injected herself because everyone else was doing it.
Exactly, that makes it okay.
What do you read of the silence then, Mick? Obviously,
a lot of people went to the AFL yesterday.
I'm sure a lot of people did. What do we read on this? There's some pretty nervous people around, or?
Well, one article said that there was a moratorium and people had confessed. I asked Ross Oakley if Hawthorn had confessed and he said, no, they didn't. So, look, it's too long ago for anything to happen, but the truth always outs. Who said that? Might have been Shakespeare or someone.
Let's get back to the present day, because tomorrow, as I say, we record on a Tuesday, so tomorrow kicks off our massive footy fiesta of 33 matches in 20 days. It's been much publicised for recent weeks, but it's finally on our doorstep, Scotty. It's looking like it might separate the wheat from the chaff with a few sort of injuries along the way. Who's going to manage it best?
Well, definitely. I mean, we saw a bit of that last night. You know, Geelong had six changes. I think minimum everyone's going to have six changes. Collingwood have hit a big wall. North are in a wall. Richmond, Bashahuli's flying back up there. So teams are going to ebb and flow all through this. The intrigue is, you go hard and then one game, if you're against Adelaide or North or Fremantle, you pull the pin and put in a secondary team. I don't think teams will do that. I think they'll probably balance it all out. But tipping, it's going to be very hard to do.
That's going to be the key, isn't it, Ando? The man management, I think. For all of us that are watching it at home at the hubs, it's probably more a situation of diet management that's going to ebb and flow, because here in our house, footy nights is typically calls for, homemade pizzas or that sort of thing. But I don't know if we can quite be doing that for 20 days straight. But there's so much to juggle.
Where's Stephen Dank when you need him? Because that was Stephen. No, apart from anything else, Stephen Dank was big on conditioning and recovery, wasn't he? That's what he was all about. And just say if everything he did was legal, he was potentially very good at it.
Less than one Anzac Day. They had like a three-day break or something, Ando, from memory.
I reckon did they have five games, Scotty, in 26 days? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, he had them in South Yarra in some...
Four games in 26 days.
Ill repute place.
Yes. Not a happy place with a happy ending, but it was something similar to that sort of thing. Was it... So Geelong have got four games in 14 days, 14. And they play the top side, Port Adelaide. They play the fourth place and fifth place sides in West Coast and St Kilda, and they play North Melbourne. So their season's probably going to be determined in that four-week bracket. And I always thought with Geelong that losing the game to Carlton that they should never have lost, but they had a lot of chances to win it, may come back to bite them. But they get, you know, they probably get players back. Joel Silwood said he may play. I'd be amazed if they... It'd be really interesting to see what they do against the West Coast Eagles. Do they say, we can beat them, we're going to go all out? Or they say, look, we're not going to beat them, let's rest. Let's protect, you know, it won't be Patrick because he wants to play every game. But there'll be someone really vital. I mean, Tom Hawkins, we'll talk about him in a minute. He may have a rest anyway. But just be interesting to see what mindset Chris Scott takes into it. Because I don't think sides these days want to go into a game and say, we're prepared to lose it, as Ross Lyon did with Freo a few years back in the last round.
They're putting in the hard yards, the players, it's and the coaches and all the clubs. It's unbelievable what they're doing and sacrificing, which is why I found it astonishing last night. And Monday night's always a good way to temperature check what the AFL is thinking. You only have to watch Footy Classified or listen to a certain reporter at Channel 7 or a certain Collingwood president to know what the messaging is. And this week it was to attack the families. You know, pull your heads in. It's a privilege, apparently, to be in these clubs, not a right. I mean, seriously, it's a privilege, is it?
So apparently the situation in question, according to said Collingwood president that you mentioned there, Mick, was that a family that had travelled to the Gold Coast hub that has family in Queensland that potentially some of the kids had been sent for a day with the grandparents, who, of course, probably not really thinking in the mindset of the AFL COVID bubble, took the kids to the theme park for the afternoon. So SeaWorld or Movie World or something. Brought them back to mum and dad later that day. And according to Eddie, mum's immediate reaction was, you did what? Because, as we know, they're not allowed to sunbake. They're not allowed to restaurant. They're not allowed to, you know. But they've been told in no uncertain terms.
But why would you publicise it and smash them publicly and put their families and the players offside? If there's a problem, deal with it. Don't go on all the shows and tell as many people as you can that these families are behaving like monsters.
It seems strange, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, that they
orchestrated.
The families have given up a lot to go there anyway. Like, it's not as if a lot of the wives and partners and families of players, you know, they may have given up jobs back here in Victoria in order to go up there and be with their partner and have the kids and for the privilege, not the right of going up there to Queensland. I don't think anyone went there thinking that they were going to be sort of faffing around at the footy and sunbaking on the beach every weekend. It's a very sort of odd situation, isn't it?
Yes. I've said too much.
Yes, it is. So that was, of course, part of Gil had his phone hookup with the club bosses on Monday. They're sort of pretty regular. But what did you make of Collingwood, Ando? That was one of the strangest withdrawals. Scott Pendlebury led the team out. And then suddenly we had our man, the boss, as he's known, doing a warm-up in the rooms as the game had even started, probably indicative of what the next month's going to hold and how seriously clubs are taking it.
But led the team out and then pulls out 5 minutes before the game and then's out for a month? That's bizarre. I mean, that soreness he got, I assume that that's what the related injury is from the soreness he felt before the game. Or am I wrong on that? Is it something totally different? I mean,
he said his last kick in the warm-up, he was feeling something, and then he definitely felt something, allegedly.
Okay. And then so the goey's gone for 8 to 10 weeks. Side bottom's back next week.
Back this week. Yeah. He's back.
They looked, interesting. They played. I saw Darcy Moore go forward at one stage, so the, you know, they've got massive problems up forward without a key target, and that's, you know, Mason Cox's. Mason Cox, in my lifetime in footy, is the most amazing player in the history of the game. And I say that because if someone went to that prelim final against Richmond and saw him dominate,
tore it apart.
No, I know you can't mix, but
tore it apart.
And whoever he was playing, whether it was Rance or Grimes
Asprey,
it looked like 11 foot tall that night.
And then you came the next week to the grand final, and the first half he was pathetic.
Yeah, but he was good in the second.
Brilliant in the second. Came into the game just like he was in the prelim final.
Yeah.
And now he can't get a game. He's an incredible story, Mason Cox. And he's the tallest person in the game and the smallest person in the game, who's probably my favourite footballer. Yeah. He's also an incredible story in Caleb Daniel. So I'll talk about him later on. But I think Collingwood, I reckon their best 22, they're good enough. And I think their best 22 is good enough to win it. But I don't think that's going to happen. What's not going to happen with DeGoey? And he's the X-factor player.
And Howe.
And Howe. Sorry, Howe's the other one.
He's their striker, DeGoey.
And Langdon. And Langdon. Don't forget, Tom Langdon's a really good footballer. Really good player. He, in the grand final 2 years ago, West Coast, he was arguably their best player. He intercept marking cross half back, like Jeremy Howe. And him playing allows you to play one of Howe or Darcy Moore forward. And whether they can do that without him playing as well. And Langdon's been out for a long time. But now they've been crueled, Collingwood, by injury. But that's footy. That's what the game is.
Just another couple of quick ones just to knock over before we get to the whisper and your mid-year All-Australian team, Ando, as we head to the term with your best of the best. Patrick Cripps, what do we think? Assaulted was the word used in the tackle by Mark Robinson in Monday's paper. What do we make of his treatment?
This is nothing new. I mean, and it wouldn't be new for Cripps. I mean, there was good vision of North not looking at the ball and grabbing him. Look, it's a smart play. Every club does it every now and again, bring it up publicly. So this week you get an easier run. Look, I don't like it. I mean, you want the best players to be able to try to have access to every contest, but in the real world of AFL football, you're going to have someone scragging it.
Yeah, but pay fine. A free kick. Pay an early free kick.
Set the tone.
Nip it in the bud.
Yeah, because it's...
Yeah, I'm with that. Right. Yeah, and he cops more attention than most, if not all players, Patrick Cripps. So I think that's the fair complaint.
He was fined for wrestling in that game, as was Jed Anderson, by Michael Christian. And we're all waiting today, Ando, you mentioned Tom Hawkins before, to find out what Chris O does with
an
errant elbow on Luke Ryan. What do we think about that?
Tom Hawkins, and Scotty knows him well, he's a really...
He cost him a premiership.
He arguably cost him a premiership last year.
They play in the grand final last year.
Yeah, I reckon they do too. I think
Absolutely they do.
Tommy, and that was a round-arm punch to Will Schofield's head behind play. But such a decent bloke, and he's a good footballer. Geez, he's playing some good football, Tom Hawkins. And a clever footballer.
Going back to the prelim, though, the ball needed to be in their forward line in the second half.
It was in the stadium, Mick. It was close enough.
Mick, if he'd played, the game would have been over at half time.
Correct.
Yeah. If there's a big shiny cup down at Punt Road, though, if you want to go and have a look at it.
He can't be suspended for this. I mean, the contact is not enough. The bloke barely touched him.
And the bloke was fine. Yeah, he was fine after Scotty. The history of Michael Christian is that if the player suffers no permanent damage, nothing to talk about. So he will...
Nat Foss got a Brownlow to attest for that theory when he elbowed Tom Lynch in the head last year.
So is Chris Judd.
And Trent Cotchin,
he's a certainty.
Took out half of GWS one premier final.
Well, he was going for the ball. That was a different act. That was a bump.
He didn't even know the ball was near Dylan Shield when he ran through him.
Dylan Shield didn't take that well, and then he did it himself a couple of weeks ago, did he?
I'm just coming to this All-Australian side to see whether I've got any Richmond, Richmond players here. I've got one in there, Mick.
Horrendous, Ando.
I've got one player in called Dan Butler. The only problem is that you got rid of him and he played as a fielder.
Jacob Townsend should probably be in there as well.
Yeah.
No, I was happy to let St Kilda through to the keeper this week, boys, because I'm more than happy to keep the lid on there. I couldn't tell you the last time they sat third on the ladder, but the campaign might start here, Scotty, for the the grand every subsequent round from here on in and the grand final to be played at Adelaide Oval. I think it's working.
You hadn't won there for 12 years or something. Now you love the place.
Oh, mate. The winds of change are here. Nah.
It's all about Noosa. The
Rats pack. The Rats pack run, too, on Sydney Hastings Street.
And the Suns.
Is that who you got now?
They'll be entrenched in the top four, the Saints.
No, I think if they could win, I'm not here to suggest that they can go all the way. I know some have. One former player in particular went very hard, didn't he? Very swiftly turned. But no, I think if they could win a final this year, it'd be absolutely huge. They're doing great things up there under Brett Ratten. It's time for the whisper, Scotty. I really loved what you did in the Tuesday Herald Sun Super Score edition.
A bit of rinse action. You never rinsed the hair, did you?
Yeah, I did, Scotty, unfortunately. I was about 21. I had blonde hair when I was a kid. Then my hair went sort of brown and mate said to me, mate, you got to do something about your hair. It's just this mousy brown. So I put this thing in called One Shade Lighter. We're staying up at Gold Coast. And we'd met some girls on the beach, and then I put it in overnight, left it in for too long. My hair came out orange the next day, and I got laughed off the beach. I said, "This place is a total clown. Have a look at it." So I've got to be careful when I'm having a crack at footballers about their hairstyles, I guess.
Oh, that is fantastic. Well, there's probably a good lesson in that because, as I say, we love a media-based whisper here at the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Scotty's gone with that today, so there's probably good advice for maybe some budding emerging talent from Ando himself. Very wise man. Never rinse.
Yeah. Today's Loz is Nakia Cockatoo is a person of great infatuation by the Geelong faithful and particularly their coach. But I believe finally he will be sighted again, and that they play West Coast in Perth this week. That might be a bit soon. But when they go to the Gold Coast next week, I think North Melbourne's their first game. Mekhi Cockatoo will play his first game since 2018 when he only showed up twice. So it's a massive thing for this footy club because he trains the house down, then does his hammy, trains the house down, does his hammy. But allegedly he's been going well for months now.
And footy's become as Mick was saying before about these, or you called them strikers, that sort of X-factor player, whether it be Dustin Martin, Christian Petrarca, Jordan DeGoey, those really powerful 188-centimetre type players who can kick goals and play in the midfield. And Cockatoo's that type of player, explosive player. So he could change Geelong's fortunes a bit.
Well, that's a fantastic story, Scotty. I think maybe it's ISO that's doing it to me, but I'm all about these good stories. We've had so many debutants in recent weeks, a couple of first kickers in the last couple of weeks too. So I think particularly over the next 20 days as clubs look to tinker with their setup, we might see some pretty good stories emerging. And you're right, I don't think there'd be any man happier about Nakia Cockatoo than Chris Scott. We know that he's a big fan of his man. But Ando, you mentioned earlier Caleb Daniel and Dan Butler, your best of the best series. We've been loving watching unfold on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. And given that we're hitting the turn this week, around nine, it feels like the season that's gone for about 3.5 years, but scarily enough, we're only halfway. A mid-year All-Australian team has been on your agenda this week. How'd you go?
Lost with 28 games. So I mentioned Caleb Daniel. He walks into my team. I love everything about that footballer, the way his decision-making, I think, is the best of any player in the game. And his execution's up there in the top, 10 or 15.
He's the best 20-metre kick in the league. Ender.
Yep. He's a ripper.
So good.
Harris Andrews, fullback, just picks himself. Probably one of the first pick players in this team. The other guy in the back pocket, Sam Collins, only if you asked 100 footy supporters who he plays for, 50 wouldn't know. Probably 60 wouldn't know. He's a good story, Sam Collins. He's been everywhere. Came via the VFL, finally with Werribee. Played really well last year in about 9 games, then got injured for the season. But he's gone right on with it. He's a ripper player, Collins.
Lee Matthews knows him, Ando. He gave him best on. last
week. Yeah, Lee loves him. Yeah, he's big. I'll pick him up. Yep. Now, halfbacks. I've got two halfback flanks from the same club, a club called Essendon. Adam Saad, we all know him and his dash, and he's such an exciting player. The other guy, I've got to check his first name, it's Jordan Ridley. Jordan Ridley he's got no profile at all, but he's had a ripper year, Ridley.
He's been outstanding.
Yeah, he really has. And centre back, another key defender came down the mark, Blissars or Darcy Moore. I went Darcy Moore, so Blissars would be unlucky. Wings, I tried to pick blokes who actually play on a wing. Hugh McCluggage plays that position with aplomb for Brisbane, and he's carried on his form from last year. Trevor Spoke, he's had six really good games. Big year last year, won a best and fairest. But Spoke, I thought he was gone about 2 years ago, and he's just come back beautifully. Dylan Shield, I know he's injured, but Shield this year in the games he's played, and wing's a perfect position for him. So rather than pick another midfielder just to go there, I picked Dylan Shield. He's played five of the eight games. Half forward line was easy. Toby Green, obviously. Christian Petrarca on the other flank, obviously. Charlie Dixon as a key forward, quite on the weekend, but brilliant before that. Forward pockets, Tom Papley, Dan Butler. Yeah, they stood out for me just ahead of probably Michael Walters, who can go there and play on the ball. Tom Hawkins, for score involvement, score assists, is the best player in the game. And he's kicked 14 goals. He's having an outstanding season, Tom Hawkins. Ruck, Max Gawn, has to me clearly been the best ruckman ahead of a group containing Brody Grundy, Nick Natanui, and Todd Goldstein. Now, most wouldn't have Goldstein, but I think if you look at the eight games, he's been the second most consistent ruckman to Gawn in the competition. I suspect Natanui by this season's end will have gone well past him, and probably the other bloke as well, Grundy. Dangerfield is in every side. For obvious reasons, and Lockie Neal the same. Interchange, Taylor Adams, they've been really good for the Pies. Walters, I mentioned before. Jack Steele, I think Loz's got to get Jack Steele in somewhere. He's hardly played a bad game, and Goldstein the other one. So, look, that All-Australian side, it's a very unfashionable team, but most sides would be. It doesn't matter who you pick these days, it's just so many new names, and that's been the nature of the competition. So even, and... hence people like Ridley and Collins in the side.
But my standard,
Bont would be close, but he's had some fairly average games.
McRae would be close.
McRae, I've got McRae's name written down here, Scotty. I had McRae, Luke Shuey, and Andy McGrath was another one I looked at.
Yeah, Andy McGrath's been good.
Yeah, but McRae has had a better year than Bont and Pelly to date, so he's probably really unlucky. It probably came down to Taylor Adams or Jackson McRae for that other position. So there you go.
Something not quite right with that team. I'm not sure what it was.
Yes, I think it's because there's no Tigers in. Okay, Mick, who's been your best player this year?
No,
Jack Arts.
Geez, the egg's been pretty good the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he hasn't asked the question. Who's been your best player this year?
I don't know.
No, you don't. So don't win
zero. None of your defenders.
I'm not whinging. I'm just saying let's revisit it after the finals have been played.
No. Of course it'll be different. It'll be remarkably different. But this
Who has been Richmond's best, do you think?
Well, this is a legitimate question, Michael.
Kane Lambert?
No.
He was slow early.
One game.
He's slow early. He's weekend. Come good.
Dusty?
No. Quite disinterested. Early. For the first month.
He was pretty good on that. Anyway.
One good game.
I'm not sure. Who'd be there?
Bolton. Shea Bolton.
He looks exciting, actually.
Yep. He's come good.
His fitness. All right, moving along.
Yeah, who'd be leading the best and fairest? That's an interesting question. But as Mick likes to ram home to us, it's the back end of the season that counts. And you mentioned Dusty having one good game. I'm sure Mick will argue that there's probably only one game, really, that you want him to play really well in.
He didn't make the All-Australian team last year, Dusty. Can you believe that?
He didn't. No, but I think it was one of those ones, wasn't it, where he was held to such high standards. So maybe that's it, but we'll get we'll obviously get Ando to revisit his team. We'll keep this one on file, Ando, so that we can compare it later on in the season. But that's it, boys. That's all she wrote. It's all we've got time for this week, the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Make sure you keep your mask on. You make sure you keep hydrated, keep your vitamins up and eat well over the next 20 days, because this is going to be an absolute marathon, not a sprint. 33 games over the next 20 days. So we'll be here next Tuesday, even though the rounds won't be falling as traditionally as they would be from Thursday to Sunday as they would. We will still be here next Tuesday, same time, same place, from the Hub. So we'll see you then. We'll be across it in the Herald Sun each and every day and at heraldsun.com.au. So enjoy it and stay well.